Welcome to a very special edition of Global Conversations. Tonight's topic is so controversial that YouTube will delete it. And so it is going to be on BitChute and Rumble. The topic tonight is COVID. The scandemic, COVID-19, SARS, COVID-2, the virus that never existed, and how the people of the planet were completely hoodwinked and gaslighted. My guest tonight is one of the foremost experts in the world. She will talk about her background. She will talk about her experience. And I think we will all come to realize at the end of this show that all of us have been bamboozled. My guest tonight is a friend of mine. She's been on the show before, Pormina Waugh from Santa Barbara, California. Pormina, welcome to the show. The floor is yours.
Thank you so much, Regis. So I'm just going to go ahead and start with my credentials. I have a business background in finance from Salisbury University in Maryland, an MBA in finance and economics from the University of Alaska Fairbanks. And then I was a lab tech and a clinical lab scientist from 2005 through 2011 at Santa Barbara City College and the University of California, Santa Barbara, here in Santa Barbara, in the microbiology lab. And then I moved to Austin, Texas from 2016 through 2019. So I worked in the molecular biology lab there as a lab scientist as well. And while I was doing that, I was getting my PhDs, and I finally got two PhDs, one in virology and one in immunology. I graduated in December 2016 from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine in London, England. So I think I'm fairly capable of telling you anything and everything about this virus. So let me start with the chronological events of this, what I call the scamdemic, because it was never a pandemic. It was pretty much a scam. I'll start with August 7th, 2019. Dr. Kerry Mullis, who was the inventor of the PCR technique, which is called the polymerase chain reaction, suddenly died of pneumonia and heart failure. He lived here in Newport Beach, which is about 200 miles south of me. And he was a 1993 Nobel Prize recipient in chemistry. I find it very odd that this man, who was in excellent health, he was a surfer and he jogged and he was an athlete, and he suddenly just dies in the middle of summer of pneumonia. Nobody dies of pneumonia. Anyway, there are many YouTube videos of him speaking harshly about Fauci and science in general. And I believe that they got rid of him because they were going to use the PCR to do this scam, the PCR testing. On October 18th, 2019, they had something called Event 201 in New York City. And it was a 3.5-hour pandemic tabletop exercise, which was essentially a simulation, a scenario-based discussion, apparently, is what they call it, of a pandemic. 15 global business, government, and public health officials came together, but it was sponsored by the biggest crooks and the biggest psychopaths on the planet, i.e. the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the World Economic Forum, and Johns Hopkins University. Now, Johns Hopkins University also did a bunch of other wartime exercises before, like the anthrax in 2001, remember those attacks? It was done through CEO Tom Inglesby, I believe, and he was at this event also. So they had already decided, this was all planned in advance, is what I'm saying. And you can, I've put, you know, on the PowerPoint slides, I've put the places where you can go have a look at all the evidence I'm talking about. Moving forward, November and December of 2019, the first cases or the outbreaks were in Wuhan, Hubei province, China. And they said that they got this viral, this novel fiction virus. I just call it the novel, okay? I'm just calling it the novel fiction virus. They got this virus from the lung aspirate of one patient, patient zero. But what was happening in the background, they don't tell you. In actuality, Wuhan had 130,000 5G towers that were installed in October of 2019. They had massive winter smog because it was in winter. People smoke a lot in Wuhan, especially the Chinese men. They smoke about two packs of cigarettes a day. And everybody was given a contaminated flu vaccine. And so they got sick. It was not a virus. It was 5G, the flu vaccine, which was contaminated, and all these other things like smog and so on and so forth.
Okay, Purmina, I have to interrupt. What does 5G have to do with a virus or a non-virus? And you connected it with smoking, bad health, smog, but 5G, what does that have to do with it?
Well, 5G is supposedly called the next generation, you know, that's what it's called, 5G, the next generation of EMF, so electromagnetic frequencies, you know, for your telephones, your Wi-Fi, et cetera. But 5G is not really next generation from 4G. It's actually several generations ahead. It's called millimeter wavelength. And the shorter the wavelength of the wave, the deadlier it is because it has more radiation. It's called non-ionizing radiation that essentially goes through your body much, much faster. And if you've got 5G all over the place, you have what is called EMF smog, not just pollution smog, but EMF smog all over the place. And 130,000 towers, I mean, that's crazy. No wonder, I mean, no wonder people got sick. Because that when you have that kind of technology, which is first introduced into a population, and they've never been testing or have never gone through that technology before, it affects the human body because the cells don't know how to react. So 5G does have deleterious effects on the body.
Okay, you just answered my question. Go ahead, take it away.
Okay. So moving forward, January of 2020, Italy suddenly becomes the next hub for no rhyme or reason of the COVID-19 scamdemic. And they institute lockdowns. And this was actually done because the Chinese government put pressure, I think through Twitter or something, on the Italian government to go ahead and institute lockdowns. But they had 5G towers there. And this was in Northern Italy in Lombardy. Where there's a lot of pollution, and they also have a very massive leather tanning industry, which causes a lot of pollution. Again, heavy cigarette smoking, an older population. So it was not a virus, folks. It was essentially what was going on in the place with bad health, smoking, smog, 5G, etc. February of 2020, Tehran, the capital of Iran, becomes the second country or third country outside of China to become the hub of a huge COVID-19 infection, as they call it. Again, they had 5G, massive smog and pollution, and a lot of Iranians are cigarette smokers as well. Moving forward, January and March 2020, a lot of cases, the first cases here were seen in Washington State in an old home. Again, they had 5G installed over there, but it was even worse. And this is information that is now coming out. It came out last year, and more is coming out this year.
So they were giving. Purmina, you said an old home. You mean a home for old people, elderly people?
Yes. I'm sorry if I didn't communicate properly. Where old people live. Yes, where they're staying.
Take it away.
And these people were given high doses of a drug called midazolam. And midazolam is usually a euthanasia drug, and people can look it up. And they were also given high doses of morphine. So it's apparently given to people when they're on their deathbed. Why they were given midazolam is beyond me, but they did the same thing in Canada. in a lot of these places where old people were living, and in the UK. They're suing in the UK at this point. And this is a big thing. And this is to inflate the COVID numbers. I mean,
so Pormina, did these different old folks homes, rest homes, whatever we want to call them, who made the decision to do this? If it happened in Washington State, if it happened in the UK, and maybe other, who did they just do it accidentally, coincidentally, or what the heck was going on?
Well, this was planned out for many, many years. I've seen things where this was planned. All the countries, 120 governments, probably governors and presidents and everybody. The governors were involved at a later stage, but the heads of state, 120 governments, I think, got together and had already ordered, this was in 2016, 2017, ordered vast amounts of PCR tests. And why were they doing that? So this was all coordinated well in advance. This was not something that just happened organically.
How do you know that?
I've put news articles in the PowerPoints itself, which shows that this was actually done in advance. So
wow.
This was coordinated action. I mean, there was, and when I come to the isolation of the virus, it becomes very clear that there was no virus. And this was done. I mean, the way this all was done was just so suspicious and fishy. I mean, it was just bizarre.
Well, what I suspected, okay, without any of your clinical background and your degrees, was all of this came down simultaneously all over the world.
Yes.
And that made me think, wait a minute. Now, I am a conspiracy activist. And when there's a conspiracy, a real conspiracy, there's truth. It isn't myth.
Right.
And I thought immediately, because of how it spread all over the world at the same time, and
right.
all of the methods that were used were exactly the same or in different parts of the world, Washington State, UK, exactly similar. How could this have happened?
Correct.
And I did Absolutely. Not believe it was coincidence.
You hit the nail right on the head. You said it. How is it possible everybody was doing the same thing at the same time? I mean, that's bizarre. Unless they were psychically, you know, connected with each other, which is that's a conspiracy. Nonetheless, moving forward, March of 2020, the WHO, the World Health Organization, which is a criminal organization and a bunch of psychopaths, and they have Tedros over there, who's a communist from Ethiopia in charge, who's not even a doctor, by the way. He has a PhD in philosophy. He has no science background at all. Anyway, he declared COVID-19 as a worldwide pandemic in March 2020. And then you had Orange Man Trump declare a national emergency on March 13, 2020, saying 2 weeks to flatten the curve. Well, we have gone beyond flattening the curve, folks. We are in a mess.
So wait a minute. Who is this guy at the WHO?
Tedros, who is the director of the World Health Organization. He essentially said, oh, now we have a worldwide pandemic. We need to have action. And he suddenly said COVID-19 is now a pandemic.
All right, so he was taking his marching orders from somebody else.
Correct. We don't know who that somebody else is. I have guesses, but I'll keep those guesses to myself.
Okay, go ahead, continue.
Then if you look at what allegedly really happened in Wuhan and then elsewhere thereafter, it is very, very interesting. So apparently 198 people got sick from some kind of a seafood market. They got poisoned with, or something. They all became sick, which they said it was a bat pangolin virus, which was bizarre in itself. And they all had bilateral pneumonia, you know, in both the lungs. But when these people, 198, went to the hospital, what they did was they took the lung aspirate from only one patient, and I call that patient zero, which that just sounds fishy and completely anti-science and bizarre. Because when you have 198, you've got a big group. Why would you only take the lung aspirate from one patient and use that? Why wouldn't you test everybody else as well? That's what you do in science. If you have to prove a virus, you need to prove that the virus exists in a big group of, you know, people who are sick, right? Okay, but they didn't do that. They just took the lung fluid from one patient. That's it. And then they did some kind of a magic trick with the genomic sequence from this lung lavage, or what, the lung fluid of this one patient. And they did a genomic sequence, they said, and they looked at one strand, which is tiny, of RNA, ribonucleic acid, of a virus, supposedly, which was 40 base pairs. And 40 base pairs is a very small, very tiny strand. A virus is usually 30 to 40,000 base pairs. So they apparently just found this small little tiny particle. And suddenly by magic, this 40 base pairs became 40,000 base pairs. We don't know how it became 40,000 base pairs, but I'll explain how they did that. They cobbled up this, they took this 40 base pairs, put it in the computer. They did a process which is called alignment. And it is called de novo sequencing, a process where they cobble up, it's a Frankenstein genome, they cobble up all the virus bacteria genomes they have in the computer, add the 40 base pairs, and then they tell the computer, hey, it's a puzzle, make a new virus. And the computer made a novel, a fiction. It was called SARS-CoV-2. Interesting. And suddenly they said, oh, look, we have a new novel genome. They declared it to the entire world. They uploaded this to what is called BLASTP, which is a database that is seen by all scientists, including myself.
What's it called?
And BLAST, B-L-A-S-T-P, as in Peter, BLASTP. And they sent it out to everybody and they said, look, we have a novel virus, which has never been seen before, and it's deadly. And then I looked at it and I thought, this is bizarre. There's something wrong with this genome. When I first looked at it, it just seemed completely off. I mean, I've seen way too many genomes. So my BS meter is pretty, you know, it's pretty sharp. So I go, wait a minute, what is this? Is this some kind of a joke? Anyway, then in December of 2019, they had a bunch of bizarre videos. I don't know if you remember this on YouTube, and they were proven to be fake, where a bunch of people were in China, were just falling dead on the street. They had seizures, they were bleeding from the mouth. And they did this in Tehran. They were showing these people just dying, just falling over, keeling over in the streets. And they said, oh, look, they're dead from COVID, this new novel virus. They wanted to show how deadly it was. They wanted to prove to people how deadly this thing was. And of course, the fear mongering and gaslighting was complete in the West. Everybody, and these YouTube videos were bizarre. They suddenly started in December, and by January they were gone. You couldn't find them anywhere.
Okay, let me ask you something. Were the Chinese involved in creating those fake videos, or was this somebody else?
I have no idea. I think, well, who knows what was going on there? I do know that those videos were fake, because have you ever seen anybody dying of COVID on the streets with blood coming out of their mouth or shaking and getting seizures? I haven't.
Most of us, who myself and people watching this, probably have never seen anybody dying in the streets or on basketball courts or soccer pitches.
Right. So I find that very odd to, you know, have somebody having what I think what they wanted to do is the fear factor. Oh, look, everybody's dying. It's really bad. We better do something, that kind of a thing. You just get everybody, you know, gaslighted.
So was Northern Italy involved in this too? Because there was so much news about all these people dying in Italy. I mean, was that part of the same gaslighting?
Yes. Yes. In fact, the Italian government came out and said the number of people who died didn't die from COVID. They did autopsies and they said, hey, what are you talking about? They just died of smoking and pollution and the same stuff they die of every year. I mean, these were people who already had pre-existing conditions, diabetes, heart disease, cancer. So, oh my gosh.
So in Italy, we're talking about Italy now, these people, and the government reported they didn't die of COVID. They would have died naturally, normally,
yes,
from these comorbidities. Is that correct?
Correct. Correct.
Wow.
But okay. Everybody, and I haven't put that in my PowerPoint presentation. I forgot to, because there's just so much information. If I went on and on, we'd be doing this all day.
Yeah, it's mind-blowing.
But if you look at the official numbers that the CDC published for this number of people who died in 2019 versus the number of people who died in 2020, 60,000 less people died in 2020 than in 2019. I think the number was 285,000. In 2019, and in 2020, it was about 215,000 or something. So how is that a pandemic when you have less people dying in 2020 than in 2019? And a pandemic, by definition, is where millions of people just drop dead. I mean, they literally just drop dead like they did in those videos. And that didn't happen. So there was no pandemic. It was a pandemic of this fear. Anyway, moving forward, the WHO, the criminal psychopathic organization that we have, instructs these two German scientists, and this, you know, there are hubs on this planet where stuff comes from. One of them is Germany. Victor Korman and Christian Drosten, two molecular biologists out of Germany, were told by the WHO to come up with a PCR test for SARS-CoV-2. To come up with a PCR test. This is very fishy. Why is the WHO telling somebody to come up with a PCR test? And why are they using a PCR test? So I've put the paper, I've cited the paper, Drosten et al., the diagnostic detection of 2019 nCoV by real-time PCR, RT-PCR. The RT stands for reverse transcriptase, which is an enzyme they use for this virus, so-called fiction virus, the novel. I'll just call it the novel. But what is very interesting and very peculiar in the paper, when you read the paper just at the very top, it says they made the RT-PCR test based on an in silico or computer-based genome. Let me repeat that, an in silico or computer-based genome, not on an actual isolated, purified, or characterized virus sample. So these people had never seen the virus at all. They've never seen it under a microscope. They never looked at it in a lab. They just saw the genome that Wuhan had sent them. Remember the novel genome? And they made an RT-PCR based on that. Wow, what a concept. How you can't get even more anti-scientific than that. In fact, they admit this fact in the paper. And I quote from the paper itself. We used known SARS and SARS-related coronaviruses, bat viruses from our own studies, as well as literature sources to generate a non-redundant alignment, which it says is shown in the annex. We designed candidate, this is important here, we designed candidate diagnostic RT-PCR assays before release of the first sequence of 2019 nCoV. What they're saying is, what they're really saying is they had an RT-PCR test ready before the actual genomic sequence, before the computer sequence even came out. So how do you have an RT-PCR test when you don't even know the virus exists? I'm confused. I mean, I sit there and I go, whoa, you can't, this is not even fraud. This is daylight fraud. I mean, this is beyond bizarre.
Okay, let me ask you a question. You work in a lab. Do you work with other people? Were other
yes.
people seeing this? Were you guys talking to each other? Because I don't want people to think that, look, Pormina Wah is some cuckoo Frankenstein somewhere cooking up this stuff. But there are other people that you work with that we're seeing the same thing. Did you talk about this? Were they all kind of as dumbfounded as you are?
We were horrified. We were all scratching our heads and going, is this for real? I mean, how can you make a test, a PCR test, for a virus that has not even come out yet? I mean, they're saying it right there. We designed the RT-PCR test before the release of the first sequence of the nCoV 2019. That means even before the genomic sequence was out on our databases, the BLASTP databases, they already had an RT-PCR assay ready.
So did you guys express any of your concern publicly? Well, I mean, how do you, or no, you just wouldn't do that?
Well, we talked to the principal investigator who was in charge of our lab and a bunch of other people, but I think people were just so scared. And the general public, you know, they don't even know science. I mean, they just go along with whatever the government tells them. But even other scientists were just sort of, I think other scientists, I don't know what it is, if it was fear, gaslighting, or they just were in denial, they didn't care. I have no idea to this day. They just went along with it. Oh no, but there is something. The WHO says there is something. I said, where, what is it? Where is it? Have we looked at it? Have we found it? Where is this virus? Have we tested the virus? Oh no, but I've seen a genomic sequence. Hey, I can make a genomic sequence and load it on BLASTP and you wouldn't even know any better. And that's exactly what they did, except it came from higher ups. If I had done it, it would just be a dud because, you know, I'm a miscreant. But it came from the WHO, okay? So, oh my goodness, well, let's all worship, you know, at the temple of the World Health Organization and the IMF and all these United Nations and all these amazing, illustrious people.
Like Bill Gates, who's out in front of this whole thing.
Yeah, Bill Gates, who's a complete dropout and who knows nothing, who's a eugenicist. But hey, man, he has credentials. Let's follow him. Don't listen to a virologist anyway. then the scam comes apart even more. I mean, this gets even more Twilight Zone-y than I've ever, I mean, I've never seen anything like this in my entire life. So the Corman-Drosten paper, which was completely flawed, if you read the paper and if you, I mean, you don't have to be a PhD to understand the paper. It's fairly simple. There was some kind of a European commission of 15 scientists that came together and they said the whole paper was completely flawed. It had 10 major flaws. And the RT-PCR test they had designed, because of these flaws in the testing of when they came up with the test was useless because it was giving huge false positives. And I will tell you why it was giving huge false positives. Remember those 40 base pairs? The little strand of RNA they found, it was not a viral RNA, it was human RNA. RNA and DNA just float around in our fluids, you know, in our bodies, in our blood, in the circulatory system, in the lymphatics. They just found it in the lungs. And they said, oh, look, they gaslighted everybody. Everybody went along with this. This is why you see positives, because if it's human DNA, other people are gonna have it. That's where you become test positive.
So
who
were these people? Repeat again, who were they who found 10 major flaws in this study?
It was a major European commission, and I've put the little link there, the CormanDrostenReview.com report, and it says who they were. It was a European commission of about 10 prominent scientists, and they give the names of the scientists in this paper who actually looked at the Drosten paper, who said, wait a minute, this paper is totally nonsense and the test is totally flawed. That's why it has huge false positives.
Okay, so did they publish this? I mean, you have the report there in the link.
Yes.
Obviously, nobody heard about this.
Everything just gets censored, canceled, And if you're not a scientist, you will never find this out. I mean, this is in these journals and things like that. I mean, and even most scientists don't really read all the journals. I mean, there's...
Well, and let's not even talk about the scientists now. Let's talk about all the general practitioners, the doctors, the nurses who...
Those people are one step below the scientists, because people like me, the PhDs, the clinical lab scientists, we're called CLS, clinical lab scientists. We are the first, we do all the research in the lab, then we publish these papers like this one, and then they are read consequently by doctors and nurses. Nurses usually are so dumb, they don't read anything, pardon my French. But doctors, most doctors don't care. All they do is see a patient for 2 minutes and they're done. They don't care. No, most doctors don't keep up on research.
Yeah, they would do what the WHO or the pharmaceutical companies tell them.
Yeah, absolutely. Because
basically, you know, modern day medicine is just prescription. Treat the symptoms.
Modern day medicine should not be called healthcare. It should be called sick care. They make you sick.
Yeah. Okay. Well, go ahead. Continue.
Anyway, so then, I mean, the Twilight Zone continues, the clown show. To make things worse, a group of scientists in India, they published a paper in February 2020. I actually have the PDF of the paper, which I sent to you, I believe, because they've gotten rid of the PDF altogether. It shows the published genome by the Chinese out of Wuhan had uncanny, and this is what they said, uncanny similarities to HIV. So let me get this straight as a virologist. How do you have a novel coronavirus that is very similar to HIV? That's just bizarre. I mean, how is that even possible? So that's because there was no virus. It's because they cobbled up a bunch of genetic components together on a computer through a process called alignment. They made an in silico or computer generated genome and they put it up. It's a Frankenstein genome made out of all the genetic sequences they had from bacteria, viruses, that includes HIV. And so these Indian researchers inadvertently pointed this out. They were forced by the American Microbiology Association to retract their published paper. So the paper got published in January and they had to retract the paper in 2020, February. And it ended up on a website called retractionwatch.org. I didn't put it in here, but I've put the other link to bioxiv.org. And I sent you the paper because these people, when you go to their link, it just gives you the abstract. So the very beginning of the paper, and they don't show you the rest of the paper. You can't find it. They've just erased the paper from the World Wide Web altogether. So, yes. Now I come to the meat of this presentation, virus isolation, purification, and characterization. So to prove that a germ or a virus causes a set of symptoms or a disease, you have to show gold standard proof that the virus or bacteria actually exists, number one, and number two, that the germ or virus actually causes the disease or symptoms. Now, my question is, have the CDC, the FDA, the WHO, or any scientific lab or academic lab anywhere on this planet in the last 2.5 years ever isolated SARS-CoV-2, which is the virus that supposedly causes COVID-19? COVID-19 is the disease or symptom. SARS-CoV-2 is the virus. Most people think COVID-19 is the virus. That's not true. SARS-CoV-2 is the virus and COVID-19 is the disease or symptoms, okay? So the answer to that is no, it's a big no. And let me prove why I'm saying this.
Now, wait a minute. Let me understand something. SARS-CoV-2 is not a virus.
No, SARS-CoV-2 is the virus. COVID-19 are the symptoms or the disease that is caused by SARS-CoV-2. But most people, the regular Joe Schmo, they say, oh, I got COVID-19. They think that they actually, you know, got the virus and they think COVID-19 is the virus.
So
COVID-19 is just the symptoms.
Did they get a virus, SARS-CoV-2? All these people that had these symptoms, they really had a virus.
No, they did not have, SARS-CoV-2 doesn't exist. Nobody has ever isolated, and I'm getting to that. Nobody has ever seen it under a microscope. We have never isolated it. All we have is some fantasy computer genome. That's it.
That says this virus existed.
Correct.
Oh my, okay, I'm sorry. I think a lot of other people like me, I want to jump ahead, but go ahead. So
that's why I was saying, in order to prove that a virus exists, you actually have to isolate, purify, and then after the isolation and purification in the lab, then you have to actually look at the virus under a scanning electron microscope and then say, oh, okay, there it is. And then you have to do other studies called causation studies, and I'll get to that. If you don't do that, there's no virus, folks. A genome doesn't cut it. That's the gold standard. It's called isolation, purification, characterization, and causation studies. This is the gold standard that should be followed, not just in virology, but anything, bacteria, fungi, et cetera. And they haven't done any of that. They've never done it. So, you know, why be surprised? Okay. So SARS-CoV-2 was never isolated. The proof number one is Christine Massey. She's just a regular person. She has a medical, I think she has a master's in science or something. She actually wrote to, she did what is called the Freedom of Information Act. They're called FOIAs, F-O-I-A's. And what you do is you write to your government, your health department, and you say, hey, I want proof of isolation, purification, and characterization of SARS-CoV-2 that it exists. I want a paper, a peer-reviewed paper, or pictures or anything, you know, electron microscope pictures of the virus. She sent this to the British Columbia Provincial Health Services Authority, who said they have no record describing isolation of SARS-CoV-2 by anyone, anywhere, ever. And I've put the link to all her, you know, the stuff that she got back from them saying they've never seen anything like this. Okay, moving forward to another one, the Public Health Agency of Canada, where someone is clearly unhinged from reality, admitting that the request has resulted in a no records exist, while insinuating that the problem is not accepting the oxymoron, which is useless PCR tests, vile assumption based on a wildly uncontrolled experiment as a substitute for actual SARS-CoV-2 isolation, essentially meaning these people, this public health agency also of all of Canada, by the way, not just British Columbia, nothing, no isolated virus, no record of it. The first one was for British Columbia. The second one was for all of Canada. So none of these health agencies. Here's another one submitted to the to Germany's Federal Ministry of Health by somebody in Germany, just a regular person. They were completely ignored by the ministry. They've been sending letters to them saying, hey, I want to see an isolated, I want you to show me the record of isolation and purification of the virus. And I've put the links on each one of these so you can go and check it out for yourself. Again, nothing there, crickets. The next one was Nobel Prize nominee Dr. Stefano Scoglio. He's from Italy. And two other investigative journalists, and this is actually a pretty good expose in The Off Guardian by Thorsten Engelbrecht and Konstantin Demeter. They actually asked a bunch of countries through these FOIAs, hey, send us, we want to know if this virus exists. Can you please send us records of the isolation and purification of this virus? Guess what? All of them said we don't have any proof of the virus existing. I mean, they're telling you, they're just being upfront and saying we don't have any records of the virus existing. So here's Australia, Australia's Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organization, admitting to having no record describing the isolation of any virus on Australia's national immunization schedule by anyone, anywhere, ever. Wow. I mean, are you serious? New Zealand's Crown Research Institute, the Institute of Environmental Science and Research, once again, equates isolation with culturing, and this time admits, again, to having no record of isolation of SARS-CoV-1 or 2 or any virus in New Zealand's immunization schedule.
Okay, Pormina. All right, I'm a layman. I'm not a scientist, but, you know, I try to keep up. Big deal. Couple of labs or whatever in Canada and now Australia and one in New Zealand.
And the ones in Germany.
Yeah, okay, Germany. What about United States?
It was done with the CDC as well. And I just didn't put it in here. Otherwise, you know, it'd just be huge. But the CDC was the first one that Christine Massey, and she's Canadian, but she wrote to the CDC and she says, hey, can you please send me the records of isolation and purification for SARS-CoV-2 and its existence? And they said, we don't have any records of its existence, just like these guys.
Okay, so I'm glad that we made that clear. Because for most Americans, all Americans, okay, they would have no idea that when asked, the CDC or the WHO or anybody else all responded, we have no record of any of this.
And this is why I've put the links. When you go to this website, you'll get the 100-page, I mean, every single country, and that includes the United States. I think it was 130 countries.
So There should have been some reporters who specialized in health and medicine and science who probably did or didn't know this. I don't know. But if they did, they weren't able to publish a counter or contrary.
This stuff exists. This stuff does exist on the web. Obviously, I have found it. But you have to know where to look because I'll tell you the travesty of this whole thing is the media is completely complicit. The media is completely blocked out. I mean, it's like YouTube. The moment you say SARS-CoV-2 or COVID-19, they cancel you.
Anything. I wanted to make that point, but you obviously hit it right on the head. And I think that was very important because all of these journalists, many of them specialize in science and health and et cetera. Obviously, we're either complicit or silenced, correct?
Yes, unless you go to some place like the Off Guardian or something like this, but you have to know where to look. And in most cases, you know, you're getting relegated to Rumble or BitChute, where most people don't go. Most people go to YouTube or they go to Fox News or CNN. You think they're going to tell you the truth?
Yeah, right. Yeah, any of the mainstream media, New York Times, Washington Post.
Yeah.
All of them. Yeah.
You know, I call the Washington Post the Washington compost. So I mean, it's a mess.
I don't want to distract you, but, you know, I'm here sitting here thinking like a lot of other people watching this when it's up on BitChute and Rumble and VK and my website. I think they're going to be asking the same questions. So anyway. Go ahead. I'm sorry if I'm interrupting, but
that's okay. I just I want to go through this quickly because I don't want to take up too much of your time. But so virology, is it fraudulent? Is it a fraudulent field? The answer is a resounding yes. And a virologist is telling you this. So the million-dollar question is, how do virologists isolate, purify, and characterize a virus in the lab? I'm talking about conventional virologists, not me, okay? I'm different. So the wrong way to isolate, this is important, the wrong way, what they call isolation, the wrong way to isolate, purify, and characterize a virus has been followed, this fraud has been followed since 1952, thanks to virologist John Enders and his fraudulent poliovirus isolation technique. This has been going on since the 1950s, folks. In other words, virologists do not really isolate viruses at all. Okay, they've never isolated any virus. They've never isolated polio, and they never isolated SARS-CoV-1, MERS, HIV, and now SARS-CoV-2 has never been isolated. So there's a correct way to isolate a quote-unquote virus, but it has never.
Let me ask you this. I can't help it. You say it was fraudulent.
Yes.
Did they actually commit fraud because they knew what they were doing and they intended to lie?
Or I believe so, yes.
You believe it was fraud? It was not ignorance?
No, because as a side note, with Enders and Jonas Salk were in competition as to who will get the Nobel Prize for the polio vaccine. So somebody had to come up with something quickly. So John Enders essentially fraudulently produced a phony virus for polio. So then he could make the vaccine and then he could get the Nobel Prize, which he did. This is all this. You just have to go back to the records. You know, you
all
can
right.
find so John Enders.
I have to ask you this. I think either you or somebody else told me, or I read it, polio was not a virus.
No, polio was caused by DDT.
DDT.
And poison. Lead arsenate. Yes.
Poison. I mean, yes. We use DDT to kill mosquitoes, to kill whatever, correct?
Correct. So it was lead arsenate. They were spraying lead arsenate before DDT, and that was causing flaccid paralysis is what polio was called. And then when they stopped using lead arsenate, the number of polio cases just went down dramatically. This is before the vaccine. And then what they did is they brought the vaccine out and the vaccine started causing polio. And then there was DDT, so the vaccine itself was deleterious because it had
oh my God.
A chemical cocktail.
I was a little kid and everybody got the Jonas Salk
vaccine
serum.
Yep.
I don't, Wasn't it a serum?
In some cases it was, yes. In some cases it was, I think the first one that was injected in the muscle was causing all sorts of problems. People were actually getting polio. So then they changed it to that little serum, you know?
Okay.
Medicine is it's a mess. I mean, virology is a complete disaster.
All right. This is, to call this explosive or a bombshell is to underestimate what it really is, at least.
Yeah. And people would think I wanted to wear an aluminum tinfoil on my head, you know, because I wanted to show up with that for this video, but I decided not to. People might go, what the hell is she doing?
Maybe I can Photoshop it in.
But it is that bad. It is, people might think I'm lying and I'm making this up, but they can look it up themselves. I mean, I've given you all the resources in this. So moving ahead, so what is the real definition of isolation according to Merriam-Webster, which is the dictionary definition? So it says to separate from another substance so as to obtain pure or in a free state. That means to separate completely from everything else. That's what isolation means, okay? Now, this is what virologists do, and they call it isolation, which is completely fraudulent. And this is how virologists isolate and purify a virus. I kid you not. So they've been doing this since 1952, as I said. So what they do is, let's go with SARS-CoV-2, okay? Let's use that as a hypothetical, and I'll explain how they do the isolation and the purification. So they take a lung sample, a lung fluid from through aspiration from a patient who has tested positive for COVID through the bogus PCR test. Hey, whatever, let's go along with it. They take the lung fluid, then they take the lung fluid, and then they take foreign tissue cultures. What are these foreign tissue cultures? The foreign tissue cultures are as follows: infected monkey kidney cells, which are called VRO6 cells, plus human lymphoma, which is human cancer tissue cells, or HeLa. HeLa cells are cervical cancer cells taken from a woman by the name of Henrietta Lacks. They preserve those, and they use those now in this isolation thing. So they mix the lung fluid, the lymphoma cells, the infected monkey kidney cells. Then to this toxic mess, they add toxic antibiotics like gentamicin, amphotericin B, vancomycin, and then they add antifungals. You know, there's a bunch, they call them antimycotics. So they keep adding all this toxic crap to the lung fluid, okay? Then they further to this mess add proteolytic enzymes like trypsin. The word proteolytic means something that dissolves proteins. They usually use trypsin, which dissolves the protein shell outside the cell. And then, so they need to keep the cells alive, they use what is called bovine calf serum. So when they abort a cow, they take the bovine tissue, the calf's blood is what they take, the unborn calf blood, okay? And this is the mixture, this is the toxic mixture. They take all of this, it is left in a petri dish for up to a week. And during this whole time, this toxic soup starts disintegrating. I mean, just imagine, there's all this toxic nonsense in there. And the human lung tissue cells that we put in there in the beginning, they fall apart because they're not in the body anymore. And the most important thing is they're getting poisoned by all these toxins that are in there, okay? The antifungals, the antibiotics, the cancer cells, the infected monkey tissues, etc. And then they take this mess and they go to the electron microscope and they look at it and they find the cell, you know, the human cell, the lung tissue, it started breaking open and all these little particles are coming out of it. And they say, oh, look, all the particles coming out of it, that's the virus. That's what it is. That's the virus. Literally, that's what isolation and purification is for these guys. Okay, so then they take this poison mix and they take a ferret or a mouse and they inject that poor animal with this mess. Usually they put it in the brain or they put it in the peritoneum, which is in the abdomen. And if this poor animal is Russian roulette, if this animal dies, they say, oh, look, this is a deadly virus. It's going to kill everybody because it killed this poor animal. This is their process of isolation, purification, and characterization. Okay, so a six-year-old can tell me, do you think this is isolation and purification of a virus, this whole process? I mean, would you isolate something like this? This is how they do isolation in a lab, and they call it isolation. It's not, they don't isolate anything. It's just a toxic mess is what it is. And the first five papers that came out on SARS-CoV-2, supposedly they had isolated and purified the SARS-CoV-2 virus. And I've mentioned all the five papers, and I've given all the links to, you can go look at the papers yourself. Every single one of these papers, most of them came from China. One was Drosten's paper from Germany, and one came from McMaster University in Canada, and one came from Korea. All these papers, you have to read the section which is called methodology, okay? The methodology section tells you how they did the isolation and purification. And what I just described as isolation and purification is what they have done in these papers, which is completely fraudulent. That is not how you isolate and purify a virus. And I will come to the correct way of how you isolate and purify.
I have to ask again.
Sure.
Fraudulent means fraud, means deceive, correct. Means to actually know that you're telling a lie.
Correct.
So all of these people then are being accused of lying, of committing a fraud.
Correct.
For the purpose of deceiving millions, billions of people worldwide who will think that this is science.
Correct. This that I'm describing, the fraud, is done so that they can produce vaccines and they can... The big pharma can make billions and trillions of dollars, and people can then become extremely sick. Okay. That's what the end game.
So, well, big pharma, that's almost an abstract. There are people who, and I'm not talking stockholders now, I'm talking people who own and run those corporations, right, know exactly what they're doing.
Yep.
Have to be connected with this global cabal of eugenicists.
Yep.
Like Bill Gates, the Rockefellers, and others who really want to make people sick and to kill them. Am I right?
Yes, because the money coming from Bill Gates, Bill Gates gives them, you know, Bill Gates is the highest, I think he has given the most money to the WHO, NIH, and all that money trickles down to the academic institutions, like the lab that I work for. So we have to do their bidding. If we don't do their bidding, we're done. I mean,
so how is it your lab survived?
My lab didn't survive. We got raided, and I'll come to that.
Okay, go ahead.
So anyway, so now what is the correct and scientific way of isolation, purification, and characterization? So prior to 1955 and Enders and polio and the vaccination fraud, virology was somewhat of a sober field, but I'm being very cautious with that word sober, okay? My lab and six other labs in the United States that I personally know of and anywhere else on the planet have actually isolated, purified, and characterized the lung fluids of supposed COVID positive patients in the correct scientific methodology. And I will describe to you very quickly what that correct scientific methodology of isolation is. And here we go. Again, we take the lung fluid from a patient who has, you know, tested positive through the bogus PCR test or whatever, you know, coughing or whatever. And you take that lung fluid. Now, you take the lung fluid by itself. Remember how they were adding all sorts of antibiotics and monkey kidney cells and everything? You don't add anything. You just take the lung fluid by itself. and you filter it through something like a coffee filter, but it's not a coffee filter. It's actually a virus filter. It's very, 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 very small. It's called a qualitative viral filtration. It's called a gravity filtration process. It's like a coffee filter, except it's made for viruses. This filter paper. You put the lung fluid through this filter paper, and at the bottom you should get a liquid which is called the filtrate. Okay, so the filter paper has filtered out everything else: bacteria, human lung cells, fungi, everything. The only thing that should show up at the bottom is viral cells. See, we're not adding anything. So this is called gravity filtration, or you can also do vacuum filtration. So all you do is attach a vacuum pump to the filtration process, and it's faster. You know, it's not just drip, drip, so it comes down quicker. Then you take this stuff that you found at the bottom, which is called a filtrate, and you put it in a test tube. And the test tube has what is silicon beads and or a sugar solution, or another solution is called cesium chloride. You put that, and then you put the lung fluid in it, and you spin it in a centrifuge at very, very high speeds. This is called density gradient ultra centrifugation, okay? That's all we're doing here: gravity filtration and density band ultra centrifugation. When you finish spinning it at high speeds, you take the test tube out, and what you get is these bands by density. You know, you get all these bands of things by the density, whatever the density is of that substance. The density of a viral band should be 1.16 nanograms per liter. That is usually where the viruses accumulate. You take a pipette, you know, it's a particular type of, I don't know what to call it, a little pump-like thing with a sharp, it's like a suction thing. You put it where the density band for the virus is, you suck it out, and you put it on a sterile petri dish. Very simple. This is a very simple procedure, okay? There's nothing complicated here. You pipette out the viral particles from the test tube and from that density gradient, and then you do a biochemical analysis, either through what is called Sanger sequencing. So you do a genomic sequencing through Sanger sequencing, or you use something called the Maxim-Gilbert DNA sequencing process. Either one is fine. And then you look at it under a scanning electron microscope. And this is it. This is how you isolate and purify a virus. Very simple. We have not added anything toxic to it, okay? This is a very simple process. Now, the next step is very crucial. And in fact, 99.9% of virologists don't even do this anymore. You have to do something called causation studies. Remember I said that you have to prove that a virus causes a particular disease. So you have to show that this causes this. And the gold standard of that causation, it's called the Koch's postulates. There are four Koch's postulates. And you have to meet every single of those four points, those four Koch's postulates. And they are as follows. So it says, the microorganism must be found in abundance in all organisms suffering from the disease, but should not be found in healthy organisms. Essentially, you have to find the virus or bacteria in a bunch of sick people, but you should not be able to find it in healthy people, okay? Number two, the microorganism must be isolated from a diseased organism and grown in pure culture, what I just described. So you have to isolate it and grow it in pure culture. Number three, the cultured microorganism should cause disease when introduced into a healthy organism. So when you take this pure culture that you've isolated and purified and you inject it into a mouse or a ferret, they should show symptoms of disease. And number four, is the microorganism must be re-isolated from the inoculated diseased experimental host and identified as being identical to the original specific causative agent. Let me explain this very quickly. So when you inoculate the isolated stuff into a healthy animal and that healthy animal gets sick, then you have to do the whole isolation procedure again You have to take that fluid out of the now diseased animal and put it into another healthy animal. Does that make sense? And reproduce those results. Those are the Koch's postulates. They've been around since 1893. Robert Koch was a bacteriologist, and this is the gold standard of bacteriology and virology. But then you see the virologists, they didn't want to follow Koch's postulates, because if they followed Koch's postulates, it would be very evident that viruses just don't exist. So they just don't do the Koch's postulates anymore. They just kind of, you know, skirt around it and stuff like that. So so the correctly and scientifically isolated and purified virus, okay, should have an intact genome of between 30,000 and 40,000 base pairs, not the 40 base pairs the Wuhan scientists found, which they called the novel virus. Now, what are the base pairs? I quickly want to go into what these base pairs are. Everybody says base pairs, base pairs. What the hell is a base pair? So the base pairs are what are called the DNA base pairs. 1, 2, 3, 4. We have 4 base pairs that make up the DNA molecule. And those base pairs are called nucleic acids. They are A for adenine, T for thymine, C for cytosine, and G for guanine. Now, it's like a zipper. A always pairs up with T, and C always pairs up with G. They never go with, so A doesn't go with G. A will always go with T, and C will always go with G. In RNA viruses, like SARS-CoV-2, the supposed novel, it's an RNA virus. The thymine, the nucleic acid thymine, is replaced by another nucleic acid called uracil. So A will go with U instead of A going with T. So I hope that, I'm sorry I'm going into all this detail, but this is how this works. Then, like I said, the Koch's postulates, you know, the virologists didn't like Koch's postulates. So they decided to go with something called, they decided to modify. They actually call, they say, oh, we modified Koch's postulates, and they called it Rivers criteria. Thomas River was a virologist in 1937, and he came up with these Rivers criteria for virology. And instead of using the Koch's postulates, now they're using antibodies, and antibodies are fiction. They don't exist. So I'm not going to go through all the 4 elements of the Rivers criteria. People can just read it, but, and they can, I put the link to what the Rivers criteria is, but it's very similar, but it's not exactly Koch's postulates, because if they followed Koch's postulates, they would never ever isolate a virus. It would just not be possible. So they don't bother. Anyway, now I'm coming to what I did in my lab in April of 2020 with the isolation, purification, characterization, causation findings. So I was contacted by my lab principal investigator, and who's the chief scientist of the lab. And they said they got 1,500 COVID positive samples from Southern California. And we got a huge $1.5 million grant from the NIH to do the isolation of the novel. So she says, you have to help, you have to help. I said, no, I really don't want to do this. She says, no, no, you're very good at it. So could you please help us? So I said, all right. I said, I'll help you only if I can do the isolation, purification, and causation studies the way I do it, the way I do it as a pathologist, not how virologists do it, the wrong way in the toxic soup. And we went back and forth, you know, for almost an hour. And she finally said, all right, I'll let you have free range. You can do the isolation techniques the way you want them done. So we had 20 lab members. And we started the process of isolation and purification, characterization, and causation the way I described it should be done, the correct way, with the Koch's postulates and all. We started in late April 2020, and we went all the way through September of 2020. I mean, that's several months. And the reason is my PI, the principal investigator, wanted the test done 3 times. She wanted us to do the isolation done 3 times on the 1,500 samples, because she kept saying, when the first time when we did it, we didn't find anything. We just found cellular debris. We didn't find SARS-CoV-2. We didn't find flu. We didn't find anything, okay? And she says, oh, you didn't do it right. There's cross-contamination and poor scientific methodology. And I said, are you kidding me? I've been doing this for 20 plus years. We don't make mistakes like that. I said, all right, you know what? We'll do it two more times just to satisfy you that, because she was upset that we hadn't isolated SARS-CoV-2. She was very much wanting to isolate and find this novel virus, okay? So maybe she could get a Nobel Prize or something. So we did it three times and we found the same thing, just cellular debris under the microscope, the way we did it. And then, you know, once we did the Koch's postulates, we used ferrets instead of mice. And so we had 100 ferrets that we injected this material into. And then you always have to have a control group. That means you take a control group of another 100 ferrets and you inject them with saline solution, correct? So you have to have a control group and a regular group. Again, in regular virology, conventional virology, they never do control groups. They don't do anything right, let's put it that way. So after all the testing that we did and the Koch's postulates, when we injected the ferrets, okay, this is very interesting. The ferrets, if there was something really deadly, like a virus or something that makes people sick, you know, which they say all these people had runny noses, high fevers, pneumonia, blah, 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 headaches. Well, the ferrets should also get those same symptoms when you inject them with this virus, right? We injected all the ferrets, nothing happened. All were healthy, they were moving around, very active, vibrant. In fact, their appetites increased. Some of them got kind of chunky. And 10 ferrets lost a little bit of fur on their tail, and that's about it. Losing fur on your tail is not SARS-CoV-2, okay? So in Koch's postulates, this is very important. The symptoms that you see in the diseased human should be identical to the symptoms you see in the injected ferrets. Identical, not similar, identical. And if they're not identical, there's no germ. There's no virus, no germ, no nothing. Anyway, so that was that with the Koch's postulates and what we had. So we found the results. My PI was not happy. She says, oh my God, now what? And we said, we got to take this to the CDC. The CDC, I said, okay, you know, why don't we take it to other universities? So she sent emails to other universities saying, this is what we found. We contacted 100 universities in this country, of which only 6 responded. 5 of those are in California. I'm not going to name any names. 1 was on the East Coast. And including us, there's 7, okay? So 6 plus us is 7. They said, all right, we'll replicate this whole process exactly the way you did it. So the isolation, purification, causation, and everything, we'll do it exactly the way you did it. We'll do it identically the way you did it. They took about a month and a half to do their studies, and they found the same thing we did. They just found human cellular debris. That's all they didn't find SARS-CoV-2. They didn't find the genome. They didn't find anything. I mean, nothing was found. So 7 universities then called the CDC. Robert Redfield was the director. I call him the hook-nosed gnome, Fauci's colleague and Trump appointee as CDC director. We called them and we said, hey, these are the findings. Okay, 2.5 hours on a Zoom call back and forth. And he says, just call it SARS-CoV-2. I don't care what you found. You found something else. You have to call it COVID and SARS-CoV-2. If you don't call it SARS-CoV-2, you're going to lose your job. You'll never work in a lab again. I'll make sure you never work in a lab again. Your lab will be closed down, underfunded, not funded, et cetera, et cetera. We said no. Our group decided to go ahead and publish our findings. And we went through 21 journals. The last journal that we went through, Science, Nature, PLOS One. The last one we went through was in October of last year, October 2021, the Danish Medical Journal. We decided to go outside the country. We thought, okay, maybe if we go to Scandinavia, they're usually open-minded. First, they said they gave us a provisional yes, and then they said no. I think the government, the Danish government, probably put some pressure or something. I don't know what happened. And then in a 2 month period between like June of 2020 through early August 2020, after we found what we found, and the CDC said you have to call this SARS-CoV-2, blah blah blah, we actually started calling the CDC and asking them to send us an isolated, purified sample so we could test it, okay? So we could actually do the causation studies and Koch's postulates. Since they didn't believe that our samples were any good, we said, hey, why don't you send us just one or two samples, right? First, they said they can't send it. Then they said they didn't have any samples. Remember, just like what they did to Christine Massey, we don't have any samples. There's no records of any samples, et cetera, et cetera. So, and then after 2 months, they just started hanging up on us, not even answering our calls. Email requests to the CDC were just ignored. And we essentially became pariahs. I mean, nobody even, the CDC just started ignoring us after a while. Finally, in April of 2021, our lab was raided by the FBI. Everything was confiscated, computers, paperwork, drafts. Fortunately, me and four other people had saved everything. I have everything saved, including the actual paper copies. I kept those, you know, the drafts, all our work, writings, everything. So we have all of that. We've saved that. We can still publish. And we're working on privately publishing our findings because nobody is going to publish us. We've tried. So we have to try to publish this, go into private publication if we can. So conclusion, there is no SARS-CoV-2, hence there's no COVID-19, hence there's no variants, there's no gamma, no delta, no Omicron, and there's certainly no damn monkeypox. Monkeypox is essentially a side effect of the jabs, folks. There ain't no new virus. If you've been injected with any of the Pfizer or Moderna or whatever, Johnson & Johnson, any of those jabs, you get monkeypox. Essentially, you're detoxifying from your skin. And they're calling it a new virus. So it's all nonsense. The isolation purification done by the virologists is just nonsense. They've miserably failed in meeting the four Koch's postulates. Not only that, their in silico genome was so shoddy that even the Indian researchers, you know, figured out what was going on there. That it was pretty much kind of made up on the computer and it was fraudulent. This is a list. I've given a list of, these are the only doctors, scientists, and websites to follow if you really want to know what's going on with this scamdemic. These people, Dr. Tom Cowan, Andrew Kaufman, Dr. Samantha Bailey and Mark Bailey, her husband from New Zealand, Dr. Stefan Lunka, fantastic guy, German virologist. He's the one who really broke this open. And then Space Busters is a really good website on BitChute. And so is a website called Virology. Virology, really good. I like the way he puts it. These people are fantastic, and please follow them. Everybody else, Malone, McCullough, Mercola, don't bother. These people, they're going down the wrong path. We have to understand that there's no SARS-CoV-2. Hence, there is no COVID-19. This is not just about the jabs. It's about the fact that the virus itself doesn't exist. So I think the next PowerPoint presentation would be on the PCR test, the masks, and then the jabs, and then debunking germ theory altogether. That's so, it.
So as you say, the next PowerPoint presentations, we're talking the next two or three shows that you and I are planning to do.
Right, want me to do them.
Oh, are you kidding? We've already gone a little over an hour and it's fantastic. But I have to ask you a couple of questions, okay?
Sure.
I don't think I can wait two more shows, but tempt me, tease me in the audience about the jab, the kill shots.
Oh, boy.
Very briefly, should people take the jab?
Absolutely not. Please keep away from them.
And what do people do if they've taken it? pray?
Oh, boy. Well, you know, people have taken them. I don't know. I mean, just don't take any more. I mean, they're going to keep coming out with boosters. Just, I mean, it depends on how good your, you know, how your good your body is, how well you eat, how much you sleep, how much you exercise, what you've been doing. The best thing is just don't take them.
Okay.
They're extremely deadly and poisonous.
Okay. So they're deadly and poisonous. And do they cause the immune system to weaken, to degenerate?
Yes. And we don't really have an immune system, but I'll deal with that in the germ theory. The way we know as the immune system,
okay.
What's happening is it's breaking the body down. The cellular structure of the body is completely breaking down. I don't even want to call it the immune system.
Okay.
It's disintegrating. And that's why people are getting blood clots and thrombosis and all that nonsense. It's
right.
Destroying the blood vessels in the
all
body.
Right. I don't know if you're going to cover this when we get to the jab.
I will. I'll go into this in detail.
No, no. I'm going to ask you another question.
Okay.
To tease me and the audience. I've done a couple of shows about this virus was manufactured in a lab beginning in Fort Detrick, and then being shipped over to Wuhan, and then maybe it escaped, or then maybe it was just deliberately spread. Are you going to cover that in one of the future shows?
Yes. Viruses don't exist. Hence, there's no contagion. You can't spread a virus, and we don't have the technology to make a virus in a lab, whether it's Fort Detrick or me or Fauci or Bill Gates or whoever. You cannot make a virus in a lab and you put it out as a aerosolize it. Okay. You can't.
So
if that was the case, we'd all be dead by now.
So what did they do? Just briefly, I can't stand to wait. What did they do?
What they did is it's an in silico genome. It was fear mongering and gaslighting and saying we released it. First, they said it came out of the seafood market. Then they changed the story. And then they said, oh, it came out. It was deliberately made in the Biosecurity 4 lab in Wuhan. All of that is nonsense. Like I just proved to you, it was an in silico computer generated genome. It was all cobbled up with HIV and MERS and SARS-CoV-1. And that's why you find all these things in there. And this is the reason, if this thing was so deadly, shouldn't I be dead? I tested all those COVID positive samples in the lab for several months. How come I didn't get sick?
Okay. Well, Pramina, I can't thank you enough.
I don't know if I answered this effectively or not.
Well,
I tried.
Your presentation today was mind-blowing. I think most people will not have heard anything like this. They're still arguing about what came out of a lab or not, and should you take the jab, and nobody's talking about there is no virus. So
if you destroy the legs of the table, you destroy the entire table. You have to get rid of the fact that you have to understand that there's no virus to begin with.
So to leave our viewers, and viewers, I hope you're going to stick with us because I'm going to be away for a couple of weeks. The next two shows, for sure, previews of coming attractions, are going to be on exactly what Pramina said, the PCR test, which even I had, and I tested negative, and masks, and then the jab.
The jab is the third show. I want to do a separate show on that.
On the jab. So there you go. Previews of coming attractions. Three more shows with Pramina coming up towards the end of the month. I can hardly wait. I wish I wasn't going away. Pramina, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Regis. It's always a pleasure to speak with you and your viewers.